Extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Ah, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Tom Boger. What's up to the MLS sickos out there? It's a big week for us. The first preseason games start this week. And where is Matt Doyle, you might ask? Well, there's a Rapids closed-door scrimmage in Mexico on Thursday. And I don't know where Doyle is, but I don't know that he's not in Mexico peering over a fence or through a crack somewhere. Drinking a wonderful cocktail.
You don't think Robin would invite him in?
Closed door means closed door, Dave.
Yeah.
Nobody's getting in there. If you see closed door scrimmage and you're listening to this podcast,
that's a good...
That's a drinking game.
That's a good business model for us. We should create a company with an exclusive experience that you can only find in one place where we get you into closed door scrimmages around the world. We do a little breakfast. We
specifically in Clearwater.
Yeah, specifically MLS preseason closed-door scrimmages. But anytime anyone's playing UCF or USF, you guys are there.
Hell yeah. And then, you know, the number one on the list Bulls. Is it Portland? Like, where's Portland rank on our preseason, tour list, our sales list? Maybe, like, the Pacific Northwest gets in for that one. I would definitely say Charleston would rake in the sales. Everybody wants to go to Charleston this time of year. Wonderful restaurants. We could get you a seminar with an assistant
coach. Do we
have
a new sponsor?
Weeby loves Charleston because he went to the preseason tournament like 8 years ago. Listen, I also like Charleston.
3 years in a row, Dave. 3 years in a row, all right?
Okay. What was the best moment you saw at the Charleston preseason?
At the Challenge Cup?
Yeah.
I always just got a kick out of... I take it back. What was the best moment? Who was the – was he Lithuanian? Was he Slovenian? How am I forgetting his name? For DC, they signed him as a DP. Hamdi Salihi.
Oh, Hamdi Salihi, legend.
Hamdi Salihi scored a hat trick,
I think it was
say.
Montenegrin.
Montenegrin, yeah, that makes sense. Up. Yeah, mm-hmm. Somewhere – Balkans, somewhere thereabouts.
Albanian.
Things of that nature. He scored a hat trick, I want to say. And afterwards, I might be making all this up. It could be a complete fever dream. Who knows? Blackbaud Stadium has a way of inspiring those. I'm pretty sure Ben Olsen rolled up, or like Josh Wolf, who's an assistant with that team at the time, was like, this guy's going to be legit. This dude's the dude, Hamdi Salihi. And I remember I probably wrote like a glowing piece for MLSsoccer.com after that. Just wonderful stuff.
Here's an interesting thing about MLS, which I believe the legend Bobby Warshaw texted to us recently or said to us last week. The nature of MLS is soccer world is so large that in theory, every single team signings could be good. Because there's not like the NBA where there's 5-star players, and if you didn't get one, like you had a bad offseason. Like, so there is this space around preseason. Normally when we're doing our team previews where it's like, this team nailed it. This guy's going to be a star. This team's loaded. And then like June or July is when it all comes back around.
Well, like open... like reveal some of the inner workings of Extra Time right now. Our most listened to show every year. I mean, you can put 100% of all your money, every unit you have on this is going to be the two shows the week before the season begins because there's so much hope. Everybody believes it. It's like, this is our year. What are you talking about? Vancouver Whitecaps, Colorado Rapids. FC Cincinnati had reason to believe, and it paid off. If FC Cincinnati can do it, we can do it too.
Hope is the most dangerous thing you can give a man. I'll just remind the listeners out there, remind everybody, just hope is the most dangerous thing you can give a man.
Come on, Tom. RJ Barrett, coast to coast, yamming on Scotty
Barnes.
And then they lost. Hope is there, and then they lost.
Anyway, preseason's beginning. Minnesota against NYCFC on Wednesday. Do I know where that's being played? Do I know who's going to play in it? No, NYCFC might not know either, to be
that
fair.
That NYCFC preseason roster, that was deep cut.
That's good stuff. We'll hit that in a little bit. Vancouver's playing. Here's a good sentence for you. Vancouver's playing Hamburg in Spain on Wednesday. Reports are, Dave, and you might have made this up, that Sky Sports is broadcasting this.
I don't know where in the world, but I think I saw in Reddit somewhere or some tweet thread that Vancouver fans were saying that you could watch the game.
So here it is, a drinking game for preseason for you, if you'd like to participate. If you read or hear the phrase closed-door scrimmage, drink. If you have to get scores, lineups, or something else from a subreddit, drink. Anything else under this one? If there's a trialist that's unnamed with a number behind their name, which is trialist.
Yeah. If there's an unnamed player playing.
Yes.
That's the full home run.
Okay. So it's all begun. MLS, we're a little more than a month away from kicking this thing off. Mm-hmm. It's coming quick. We're even less than that before we kick off the Club World Cup. The draw is official. Seattle Sounders will play the winner of Auckland City, the Oceania Champions League winners. Very small, intimate Champions League, the Oceania Champions League. And Al Ahly, the African Cup Champions League runner-up, and arguably one of the biggest clubs in the entire world. I just went and checked their English Twitter following. They have 4.4 million followers in English. So this is potentially an awesome matchup. I'm going Ahly. I hope they get the Egyptian super club there. And then if they beat whoever it is, Auckland City or Ahly, you have Real Madrid, Dave. Real Madrid. Sounders,
that's a dream.
Real Madrid.
I'm pretty sure this is what Garth was screaming about on the field in Seattle right after the game ended and was a huge part of this. And, you know, Club World Cup is a unique competition. It's not the perfect field to say like, oh, this is how teams are against each other in leagues and whatever, but there's an opportunity and it's a chance that everyone wanted. And I think even Seattle fans would say with the draw coming out is, yeah, it's the toughest matchup you can get, but it's the one you want. It's why you're there. And you mentioned the size of Al Ahly. This is the biggest club in Africa. Definitely the biggest club in North Africa, which this Club World Cup will be played in Morocco. We've seen the scenes from stadiums there and sort of what Wydad Casablanca will bring. They're the African champions. That's why this kind of skewed a little differently than in the past. And this is just a massive team, a team that has World Cup veterans in it, a team that, as you said, has millions and millions of fans around the world, and especially in Egypt, which is one of the best soccer nations in Africa. So that game, I think, is going to be like a unique moment that we're all going to remember back on, of being able to remember and experience and watch it go down. And then the chance to just watch Christian Roldan find space in the pocket against Tchouameni and Kroos and Modric. Like, that's the dream if they can get there.
Yeah, got to get there first. Can you confirm, I don't know if your reporting encompasses such things, Tom, is Auckland City FC, are they the biggest club in New Zealand? Are they the biggest club in Auckland? Are they the biggest club in Sandringham, which is the suburb which they reside? I'm not entirely sure, to be fair.
I feel pretty confident saying they're the biggest club in Auckland. And currently, they have to be the biggest club in New Zealand if they're playing the Club World Cup.
There you go.
I'm pretty sure they're the only fully professional team in New Zealand.
Are they fully professional?
I think so.
I see. Look, Wikipedia, trust it, hate it, love it, wherever you stand on that. The blurb says semi-professional.
Okay, then I'm out.
I have no idea. Anyway, all right, let's get to the transfers. That's why Tom's here. That's why we are here. You're probably saying, hold on, guys, you've wasted too much time on preseason when John Duran just got sold for many, many millions of dollars. The Chicago Fire sending him to Aston Villa. This has sort of been in the offing for a while. We had some mail about it last week. Shout out to Joe Lowry, who was on this one early. He was like, he's going to Instagram his way to the Premier League. Didn't have to in the end, Tom, because Aston Villa came in with how many millions of dollars? Tell us how this went down and what it went down for.
Aston Villa reached an agreement with the Chicago Fire for a deal that's $18 million up front, plus another $4 million in add-ons. So that's up to $22 million. Chicago will retain a sell-on percentage. I don't know how small or big. This was a little bit unique for me that I don't know if they had a verbal agreement with John Duran or not on personal terms. But like, as I was talking to people in Chicago, I was getting some whispers about this on Sunday. And I asked somebody in Chicago about it. It was like, you know, it's not... like they're in the mix for sure, but like I wouldn't say anything is done yet. And then I wake up Monday morning and see, you know, at 5 minutes after I picked up my phone that Aston Villa made the announcement, and even Chicago were surprised. But look, when you're the team spending upwards of $22 million, you get to pick when the announcement is. The surprise for me is that at that time they put in their release, this is pending personal terms agreed and a medical being done, which is usually very early in the game to be making this kind of announcement. So they either believe that it was a foregone conclusion or that was just kind of like trying to, hey, Benfica, hey, Liverpool, United, whoever else was interested in this wonder kid teenage star. He's back ours. Up. We're signing him. He's ours.
Step off. Reports are that they got in the Instagram DMs. That's where the personal terms came from. Entirely made up report there from me. This is a huge deal, Dave. And this is a huge deal for a guy that we really only saw in, I don't know, extended periods. The second half of last season. the Fire eased him in. And then once they put him on the field, 8 goals, 3 assists. I mean, he was like a freight train at times. There were games in which he was completely unstoppable. But they signed him, what, 3 or 4 years ago? Well, they signed him when he was 17. Took him a while to get to the United States, got to the Fire, sort of slow played him into the first team. Once he hit, and now he's gone. Incredible business for the Fire. Now you add on top of that Gaga Slonina, and I mean, we're talking $30+ million in sales just here in this window, right? Because the Slonina deal went through this window. That is unprecedented. That is insane. People will be like, oh, 18 million, poo-poo. 18 million is a, or up to 22. That's a huge number. And that is among the biggest numbers. Yeah.
Hold on.
In MLS history.
Really quick, before Goss goes, this is tied for the second potential largest outlay in MLS outbound history. This is a huge deal. So, sorry, go on, Goss.
No, it's also a huge deal for Aston Villa. Like, this isn't, oh, team's not, okay, fine. Chelsea operates in their own space. PSG operates in their own space. But that's a lot of money for most teams to sign. And for a guy who, let's look at MLS as well. You talked about, like, a little amount of time. Talis Magno's done more in this league already. Brenner has done more in this league already. So it shows you, one, where Aston Villa sort of views him as a player, and Chicago. Because you mentioned it, we talked about it a couple times on this show. They signed him knowing he legally couldn't come to the U.S. and was going to stay in Colombia because they believed in his talent and who he could be. And they were able to slow play it. But this is why it's exciting right now in MLS, because you have the space with the under 22 initiatives and some of the other things where you can sign a player like this, but not build your team around them. They don't have to be your DP. And so now you're in a space where you can have different types of players. And this is a risk with an eye towards selling him and not a guy you build your team around, because then you have to readjust and deal with it when they do leave. Or young players struggle sometimes. And if you're building your roster around a young player, like we saw for maybe Orlando City last year, it can be an up and down experience. And so that's where a lot of this helps. And a lot of, you know, Chicago got this right, obviously, but this is a mind blowing moment. Like, this is different than I think a lot of things we've seen in MLS.
Goss, you talk about the U22 initiative. That's a great point. This deal doesn't happen without the U22 initiative. First of all, just the roster building standpoint, he would have had to be a DP in previous years. So Chicago didn't have a DP spot to use him, to sign him with anyway. And even if they did, are you going to use a DP spot on a 17-year-old kid exactly. who had played, I think, 1,200 minutes in Colombia or whatever?
He wouldn't have even been able to come for a year. You would have wasted a DP spot.
Exactly. So like that wouldn't have happened, both literally that they didn't have a DP spot, and like more like philosophically, it would be silly to kind of build, again, one of your three high leverage key pieces to roster building. They would not use that on a 17-year-old forward who had no experience outside. Again, like, this is what the U22 initiative is for. This is why it was in. They bought him for the deal was including add-ons up to $2.5 million. I'll guess, you know, worst case scenario for Chicago in terms of all-in cost, $2.5 million. Let's just use that. $2.5 million. And then within a year, 1,300 minutes in MLS, 1,300 minutes in the first team. And it's $18 million up to $22 million. That's incredible business. Chicago would have preferred to keep him for another half season, another full season if they could have been greedy. But look, when the deal get, like, we talked about on the show, like, I thought this was going to be something like, you know, $12 million plus maybe some big add-ons, and we'll see where it goes. The fact that they're getting $18 million guaranteed and then some more and then a sell-on, like, that's phenomenal business by Chicago. And this is why they agreed to sell him now, not just before the season, but also before the U20 South American Championships, where he is going to be one of the premier players at that competition. So this is a phenomenal deal by Chicago.
And look, and Duran wanted to go.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
The other side of this is, like, you talk about creating a pathway and also a reputation and sort of getting in the eyes of young players and agents. That matters. If you are a young player or agent looking at, okay, well, where is like a way station for us on the way to Europe or on the way to a big transfer fee? You just had Gago Sinia go to Chelsea and Aston Villa come in for John Duran. Now, that is not some guarantee for your player, but it is pretty tantalizing, especially when we look at the numbers. I just want to say this, and then Dave, it's all you. 17 senior goals is fewer than the millions of dollars guaranteed that Aston Villa is punting. that sentence alone is mind-blowing.
And so I would add two things that pop in my mind. One is when asking about like the context of this, things like this have happened before where MLS has signed good young players and they've moved on quickly, just not anywhere in this stratosphere. Like, think about how long we talked about Miguel Almirón's next move. And then this one comes within a year of him finally being on the field for Chicago. but the number is in the Miguel Almiron category. And so that's sort of the shift that happens here of the whole league is focused on one big MVP level player versus, okay, how many $20 million players are in the league right now and potentially could move on? The other thing I'd say, and I've said this about a couple teams, is there's been good work done by a few MLS clubs in basically restarting their academies because they didn't do the right things out the gate. Chicago's on that list. Now for them to be able to get this type of money for a player who doesn't come out as the academy is ready to push players like Brian Gutierrez into the first team, Bezerra, obviously Pineda's played for them.
Chris Brady.
It gives you that bridge where now you have enough money to fund the academy while you're still kind of a half step away from pushing all those players through. It's why when we talked about Benji Kakanovic, I said the same thing for San Jose, right? San Jose is restarting. They're probably a year or so away outside of maybe Cade Cowell from having the Philly Dallas numbers of players. Can you bridge that gap with signings like this? And then obviously Gaga Slonina on top of all of that, who's just a unique human being. And you're not going to find a Gaga Slonina every single year.
So look, you have the allocation money side of this, which you max out at like $1 million basically on any of these sales that you can bring back in. You've got to essentially profit to get that allocation money. But that other money, as you said, Dave, that can go into funding the academy. It can go into, you know, the Fire are trying to build a training facility in the city right now. I know there's some complications with that. But you could also spend it on, I don't know, a transfer fee for, I don't know, a number nine, which you seemingly need desperately. Right now, two DPs, Jairo Torres and obviously Shaqiri. We'll talk about their lineup in just a second and kind of deep dive the Fire because this is the big headline, but there's a lot more to dig into with the club itself. I do want to do this sort of interesting exercise for you. What do these players have that John Duran does not have? Jahiel Marshall Ruddy, Bryce Duke, Jaden Nelson, Aiden Morris, Ben Binder, Efra Alvarez, Diego Andrade, Obed Vargas, Leon Flock, Cesar Araujo, Paxton Aronson, Cade Cowell, Jack McGlynn, Kwadwo Poku, Ismael Kone, Alan Velasco, John Tolkien, Julian Araujo, Gaga Slonina, Tyus Magno, Thiago Almada, Jesus Ferreira. What do all those players have that John Duran does not have? And this is a cell phone, if you haven't figured this out yet. They were all on 22 under 22, presented by Body Armor in 2022.
No way. There's no way. John Duran wasn't on that list?
He was not on the list. He was in my ballot, but very low. We hadn't really seen him yet. Like, we hadn't seen him, but we knew the talent was there.
Right. That's crazy to me. I'm looking for my own receipts to at least get myself out. I had to have put him on.
I don't think I did. When I did the rundown, I was like, do we bury ourselves here or do we not? And I think we got to do it. And I think the point is that, you know, look, that talent identification is a difficult game. We all knew there's a ton of talent there. Everybody around the league did. That this was a possibility. Should he get into the team? Should he thrive? Obviously, he did. But that there is a deep, deep well of MLS talent, maybe not at the level of John Duran, but like sometimes the launch point happens in a matter of months because this transfer doesn't happen 6 months ago, 8 months ago. It happens now based on what he showed as a teenager and ahead of South American competition.
I need to be selfish and take the blame. I did have him on, like you said, Weeby. Like mine, though, was also pretty low. I had him 19th, which, like, looking back is pretty tough, I think. Like, there's a lot of good players on that list, but I don't know. When in hindsight, it's like, why wasn't he top five? We all should have known this. But
I didn't vote for him. He wasn't even on my list, so I'll take the L on that one.
I know.
But I was watching Daryl Dike this weekend. Like, it does happen quickly still because there's a lot of pieces that, whether it's from this country or other countries, that are under the radar or they just need opportunity. We're going to talk about the January camp. And like, I think we all had Brian Gutierrez in that list. Part of that is because Chicago doesn't have anyone else to start. And that was part of Duran's opportunity, was there was space to play because Kasper Schabilko was just a failure of a signing this offseason, which if Schabilko scores 16 goals like he did 2 years ago and he's the starter, I don't know that this move happens.
It's a good point. It certainly couldn't be for this much money before the South American Championships because, like you say, he wouldn't have played 1,300 minutes or whatever it was.
Do you want to give you guys have like a quick scouting report for people who are listening to this conversation and saw the headlines and were like, I don't know who – I wouldn't have voted for John Duran on 2022 because I didn't know who the dude was either.
Yeah, I think the first thing that pops out with him is his feet and speed for a guy his size. So he looks like a massive, intimidating striker, but he burns guys in the channel. He's got incredible feet, 1v1 and finishing. And so when you watch him play, it feels like a natural winger in a large center forward's body. And that was where his most success came with Chicago, was playing, you know, balls over the top, balls through the channel, where he then was, he's a creative finisher once he gets in as well. So we, again, we still didn't see a ton of him, but that was what the best attributes we saw from him.
Yeah, he kind of killed it in transition. And like you said, like just looking at, obviously his physical traits are the first thing that you can see before you even watch him play, because he's just an impressive size, impressive speed, all that. Like, and then he looks like he's, you know, 28-year-old fully formed center forward. And then he scores a goal and the close up comes in and he turns around and he's got this boyish smile. And it's, oh my God, this is an 18-year-old kid. Like it, you have to keep reminding yourself that he is still just a kid. He's a teenager. So I don't know. I think that the best case scenario for Aston Villa is that he starts to earn some minutes early-ish. He shows that he can kind of kick it. He can hang for a little bit, kind of like Chicago, just on like a bigger stage that, all right, let's see how he adapts, see if he can win minutes. And then at some point over the next 12 to 18 months, he's a regular starter. And then at some point in 2 to 3 years, they're talking about this guy that they spent relatively not a lot of money on compared to what they sold him for. So I think that that's the best case scenario for John Duran at Aston Villa. And I think he can do it.
I think there's a goal against New England where he bodies off Andrew Farrell. The ball over
there was
the top.
That he had Chris Mavinga kind of on his body list as well with Toronto.
Chris Mavinga.
Somebody replied to my tweet yesterday when I was reporting how much the transfer was, and it was like, I distinctly remember that play against Mavinga where he just kind of threw him to the ground and scored, and then I started to think that Mavinga is washed, and now maybe I was unfair to Chris Mavinga because this kid is obviously really good, and I was like, all right, that's nice. I got pretty. I appreciate that.
I agree with everything you guys said. The other thing I will say about him is that he seems, you know, sometimes when you watch strikers, there's like a preamble to the shot if they want to put any power or placement on it. The thing I liked about Duran is it seemed like he didn't need much to get off a powerful, accurate finish, like whether that be from distance or in the box, like in those sort of like, you know, technique finishing opportunities. He just seems like he has that sort of innate ability to get a shot off with power, with placement, without needing a bunch of preamble to it, without letting the goalkeeper have time to set himself up. So we'll see how he does in the Premier League. He is one of the top five most expensive outbound transfers in MLS history. Miguel Almirón to Newcastle, obviously number one. This would be tied if he gets up to 22 mil with Alfonso Davies, who also sort of felt like he came out of nowhere, but had like 60 games in MLS and was a star at the Gold Cup. Ricardo Pepi, obviously, to Augsburg. There's now rumors that Pepi's perhaps wanted in the EPL. He was 20 million. And then Pity Martinez, which it's easy to forget as we think of Pity as a bust, but 18 million to Saudi Arabia. So they recouped.
Who were they
that
bidding
one.
Against? Who were they bidding against? I don't understand. It's a great, great business by Atlanta.
So in this transfer window, you have Duran for 22 up to Aston Villa. You have Gago Slonina from Chicago to Chelsea for 15. You have Ismail Kone from Montreal to Watford for 8. He's already playing in the Champo, looking good. You have Georgie to AZ for 6 from Montreal. You have Paxton Aaronson to Frankfurt for 4, which increasingly I'm like, man, that's perhaps going to be a big deal.
Add-ons to like 8 million plus a very big sell-on.
Oh, okay. And then Alistair Johnson to Celtic for 3.5. Good little transfer window. Good transfer window
and
so
we
far
still got,
for MLS.
We 2 weeks left. There's going to be more.
Okay. Who else? Sifu?
Well, yeah, we'll talk about these guys later. But yeah, Jose Cifuentes, Brenner, these are guys I'm expecting. I still think it's positively insane to me that no club has paid, you know, $5 to $7 million for Kai Wagner. I don't know if that's going to happen or not. But yeah, there are more to come. Maybe, you know, Benji we talked about. Who knows?
All right. Chicago Fire. That's the positive. We're raving. 18 to 22 million. John Duran, what a scouting job you've done. There is a flip side to all that, obviously. Fire fans know that better than anybody. Dan Richardson hit us up. He says he's a Chicago native. He's also in his Twitter profile pic in an LAFC hat, so you've got to wonder about some of his motives here. Why haven't the Fire been able to hit even a ho-hum level of mediocrity over the past decade, much less taste any kind of real success? New players, coaches, front office, stadiums, owners, none of it makes a difference. What gives? What's your evaluation, Dave, of the last decade, perhaps even more at this point? It just keeps sort of adding on to itself, of the Fire and their ho-hum level of mediocrity, according to Dan Richardson.
Well, it's a lack of continuity and vision from top to bottom at the club, which, and then there's different ways to explain that. I think one of the big ones is their best stretch in that time period was when they invested in Dax McCarty to come in and start for them, as well as other sort of reliable MLS pieces around the international pieces. It feels like they are a club that has relied on international players at almost every position as much, if not more, than anyone else. They haven't had a lot of MLS experience in their team to sort of settle things. And so that's one of the issues when you bring in even like a Shaqiri. There are no pieces around him that are ready to sort of carry their level for him to platform off of. And then you start having a lot of DPs you bring in that you rely on that can't perform at that level. And I've talked to a couple of people about this offseason, and maybe you guys have strong feelings. I don't have a take that a DP has to play a certain position. You just can't miss. Mm-hmm. Your DPs have to perform for your team to win. I wouldn't tell you it can't be a center back, or it can't be a center mid or a winger, whatever it is. They just need to play at a high level. Chicago hasn't been able to hit that for a pretty long time. And I think part of that is the platform they bring them in and the lack of a spine and the lack of continuity. And then part of that is obviously identification issues with the actual players. So there's a lot of that. I think there's, up until the last year, a lack of ambition in terms of the coaches that they hired. And so I think there was a lack of ambition in terms of the project that they were pitching to a lot of people. But you go back all the way. I mean, we've talked about this a couple times. Brandon Vincent retired rather than continuing to play for this franchise. And he was a borderline national team player at 23. There's other stuff going on there, but there's been issues for a while. And the hope is that they can turn a corner. I would say there is some continuity in this roster now if they can add on top of that this offseason.
Yeah, I think what you went to on the platform around the DPs is a big thing for me. It's all well and good. You got to hit those DP signings. They got to be impact players. But how can you expect a player like Shaqiri to be dominant when he doesn't have a foundation around him? You know what I mean? Like, they basically brought him into a bad team. And when you've been a non-playoff team for 10 out of the last 12 years, pretty much any DP you sign, you're bringing into a bad team. Like, there just hasn't been a coherent roster build, and DPs are included in that. But it's not like they haven't spent money. They went and got Basti. They already have Shaqiri now. You know, Robert Berich wasn't a terrible signing. Nemanja Nikolic was actually a great signing, like a value signing. Awesome. He's the sort of nine that a lot of MLS teams, when they go to Austria or wherever it is, that's what they're trying to find. A dude's a little bit.
In terms of vision, he was a last piece to win now move.
Correct.
For a roster that wasn't ready to do that.
Or he was with an aging roster that wasn't going to stay together long term and didn't have pieces that could get a piece of that experience and then be the foundation moving forward, right? Like, it just feels like constantly you're in not necessarily a teardown mode, but like, it's not even good enough to tear it down. You know what I mean? It's just you didn't even get to the point of like building the first floor. You're just like, well, bad foundation, like switch to a new lot. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, for me, like,
bad weeby analogy, my bad.
I said that if we're doing the drinking game, that I think that's an easy one for drinking. I know that I'm more bullish on Jaron Shaqiri than I think a lot of people are. I refuse to sell my stock on Shaqiri Island. I still have beachfront property there. I still think that in a system in which he gets to play as a free-ish 10, that he could be awesome in this league. And you go back to all that those points about the structure, about the spine, about everything around him that maybe made it a little bit difficult. If Jairo Torres and him can fit a little bit better, it seemed like Jairo wanted to occupy some similar spots. There was a lot going on with the structure and with kind of players coming in and out. This 11, I still don't think is bad. I still think it's a good starting 11. Like, assuming that a DP number 9 comes in, as is their goal, and they are going to do that. Shaqiri playing underneath that with Chris Mueller on one side and Jairo Torres on the other. Fede Navarro, who I'm a huge fan of. Gaston Jimenez, I like him better not on a DP deal. We'll see kind of what that looks like. It's a strong starting 11, or a fine starting 11. So, I was wrong about them last year because I was saying similar things then. So I want to caution that for anybody who might point out easily this is a lot of holdover from a team who wasn't very good last year. But I do still think in the right system, in the right structure, that this team, there is a reality where this group is good enough to make the playoffs. It just, I don't know, they have to get that DP9 right. They just have to.
And to your point, I think Shaqiri was in the 89th percentile for expected assists last year.
Yeah.
Like, he created a ton of chances. Yeah. He created a ton of chances. Most of his goals were off penalties, but I don't know that he's going to be a big-time goal scorer, but he created a lot of chances that fell to teammates who were incapable of putting them away.
One DP9 target is the South Korean international center forward Hwang Ujo, that's leaving his loan from Nottingham Forest. Chicago are one of the MLS teams that are in for him. That'd be somebody. I also am fairly certain that they're going to fill the U22 initiative slot that John Duran opens when he officially leaves with another U22 initiative attacker. And this is a team that has put $5 million into signing Fede Navarro as a U22 initiative, $6 million for Jairo Torres, young DP, $7.5 million for Jadon Shaqiri, $2.5 million for John Duran. So, like, this is a high leverage spot for teams that want to put more discretionary spend into the roster, as the Fire have shown. So I think that the profiles for these guys should be. If I was them, I would just go watch the U20 South American Championships, pick any, you know, the five attackers you like best, and just go one by one trying to sign them.
Got the funds to do it, whether it be via these sales or ownership as well. There's no shortage on that side. Now, people might be saying, okay, well, you went through that Fire 11, Tom, but you didn't mention the back line. Is that what the issue is? Chijos, I thought Chijos was a good signing for them.
Yeah.
Teron Pineda, that's a good sort of 1-2. You can go back to back there. I mean, Kendall Burks is a good reserve. Maybe you can get more. You just signed two new right backs, the French kid, and then Dave, I know you liked Jonathan Dean out of Birmingham in USL. Goalkeeper, a question mark. Is it Brady? Is it Richie? Who is it?
But Brady look, the plan is Brady, and like, I mean, it can be a competition, but like, they're, you know, this could be the back-to-back years, 3 years in a row of having a teenage starting goalkeeper for the Chicago Fire, which I don't know how you could even check this, but that feels like that has to be a record in you know, top flight divisions around the world to have back-to-back teenage starting goalkeepers.
What one name to point out, Wyatt Amsberg was phenomenal to start the year last year. He had foot surgery in the end of June. He's expected to be back this year, and he was a starter when he left. So that adds a little bit more depth, because that's been the big issue. I'd say front-end talent on the back line wasn't that bad last year, but there was no depth, and Chijos is on the other side of 30, and they had a few issues with Sekulic, and Jonathan Borenstein's been playing for them. Also, did you see the Vitas thing?
The what?
Jonathan Borenstein signed for a Honduran club.
No.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Obviously, legendary. He's a legend in Honduras because he got them into the World Cup, and Vita is like a pretty legendary youth developer on the Caribbean. So he's going to go back to living his best days.
As I say, do you remember we did the interview with him? And he's like, I just got done riding jet skis in Mexico.
Yeah, he loves the Gulf of Mexico.
He's back, so baby.
Borenstein's back in the building. But well, so that'll help with their depth a little bit as well. And the other big thing from last year, or last 2 years, Gaston Jimenez is not a designated player level. He's arguably at times hasn't been a starter level. They couldn't take him out because they spent so much on him. So one, you give flexibility to Ezra Hendrickson and his staff now. If Mauricio Pineda is a better player, then he can play him. You also bring more talent into the roster. He has been one of the big misses, even though they've kept him on it, and they re-signed him again to a DP deal, which just made no sense.
Max Tam deal, right, Tom? But it's for more years. They had to do it so they could have that DP spot open. Look, the reason I brought up the back line to like tie that point up is that allowing goals was not really their issue. They only allowed 48 goals. There were only three playoff teams in the East that did better than that. Since he made the playoffs, they allowed 56. Miami, same, 56. -9 goal differential for Miami and Orlando. That's the same goal differential that Chicago had. They couldn't score. They couldn't put the ball in the back of the net until Duran got in the team.
That's the thing, though. When they were posting those shutouts and being defensively solid at the beginning or the first half of the season, it cost them everything in attack.
Yeah, they defended like, with 11.
Yeah, and it was 0-0 after 0. Like, it was, you know, Chicago, where if there was three games on, that one wasn't making the TV because I know how this one's going to play out. It's going to be boring and slow and frustrating and 0-0, whatever. Like, oh, is DC United? Oh, Cincinnati playing? There's a chance for 7 goals in this game. I'm going to go watch that one. So, yeah, and like, their defense was solid, but they sold out completely to try to get a shutout.
And look, Ezra has to figure it out this year, by the way. That's not also just personnel.
Also to their credit, or I don't know, Gaga lost them about 6 to 7 points in the middle season when they were flirting with the playoff line. And obviously they ended the season pretty poor, but they ended 9 points off a playoff spot. And there was a literal 2-week stretch in New York, I think twice, in New England, where he cost them points because he was a teenager trying to figure out where he was going to play.
Yep.
A couple of quick questions from people on Twitter. Kevin Thomas. Guys, what's your take on the topic that it splits the entire Fire community in two? Is Miguel Navarro a starting left back in this league? Well, if we're just being very literal, he is your starting left back. Right. So
Yes, but I have heard that there is a left back target. I don't know if it's going to get done, but you know, usually if you're looking for one player at a position, that's probably not the only target. So that leads me to believe that the Chicago might want another option or different option than Miguel Navarro to start, but you know, we'll see.
Okay, that's good information. Pulled that right out of Tom. All right, here's another one. Samuel Garcia says, with LAFC listening to offers for Chicho Arango, should the Fire come knocking with their boatload of allocation cash?
Yeah, I mean, I would.
Yeah, I wouldn't see why not.
They tried with Shibilko, so maybe that would kind of scare them off. But like, if you trade for Chicho Arango, that doesn't go into his budget hit the same way if you sign somebody. So like, you could... You know, if there's a world where you can, you know, if you can get the allocation money and then sign him to a non-DP deal, you know, 28 teams should be trying to do it, at least be looking into it and considering it. It's like the same Alex Cowan's joke that we kept making for a couple weeks. Like, oh, does your team play in MLS? You should look into signing Alex Cowan's. It doesn't matter how many best 11 center backs you have. So like Chicho Arango, if you can get him on a non-DP deal, like everybody has to look into that.
What if he was a DP?
I don't think that they go that route, but like, I don't know, his output speaks for itself.
Yeah, I think the one thing that comes up that Tom mentioned is they got burned by Shibilko, and so they might be a little wary of it, but I don't understand why you wouldn't trust production in this league over unknown, right? So if you're bringing in a DP, why would you not bring in the guy who scored double-digit goals the last 2 years and won MLS Cup? I think he fits the team pretty well, right? He finds spots in the box. Mm. He's a creative finisher, but he doesn't need a ton of touches. So he should be able to play off the pieces you have, literally what we just talked about with Shaqiri. There were flags about Shibilko in Philly before he came, and I think there are flags with Chicho Arango. You can't deny the fact that his club has tried to move him now for a year and a half. So that's the one thing that you worry about. And maybe if he gets the contract he wants, and he has the role he wants, and he's the star, that's all you need. But it's still going to... I think that's going to worry Chicago based off the experience they had.
Can I ask you this, Tom, before we move on from this DP spot? A number nine, you mentioned sort of an on-loan player from Nottingham Forest. That, I think, for Chicago Fire supporters, probably would be underwhelming. Actually, I edit my... Would be underwhelming based on the sales they just did, based on the fact that this is the soccer club in Chicago. It is one of the biggest markets in the U.S. It should be more than... We need maybe I'm completely speaking out of you-know-what, that we need more than like an on-loan player from, should they go for more? Should it be a Shaqiri-esque signing, or is there a different profile to look at?
Yeah, I understand your thought, and there should be high expectations given the spend that they've had and the ambitions that this new ownership wants. But like, again, they spent $7.5 million on Shaqiri. They spent $6 million on Jairo Torres. They spent $5 million on Fede Navarro. So it's not like this would be cheapening out just to get like an in-prime South Korean striker. Like it doesn't always have to equal, well, they spent a lot of money. And again, I know that these conversations are a little difficult because generally speaking,
okay, like maybe it's money, not money. Maybe it's not money. Maybe it's just profile.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, that's probably
that shouldn't matter.
Winning again, as long as it's the right player, that's all that matters. Yeah. Do you want me to do more of the background on Chicho Arango before we move on?
Or sure. Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Well, yeah, LAFC rejected a bid from Saudi club Al Ahly for Chicho Arango. That bid was around $3 million, and LAFC had acquired him for $2.5 for million Arios. And then LAFC are kind of asking back for more than $6 million, around $6.5 million, whatever it is. I don't know. We'll see if Al Ahly comes back with a new bid. The difference, I guess, between a trade and a transfer is that, you know, it wouldn't have to be $6 million in allocation, obviously. Like $2.5 million is kind of the thought that people around the league think that it would take to get Arango. And, you know, $2.5 in GAM could be more valuable than $6 million of real money or $5 million of real money, whatever it is, because of how you can convert it to the cap. And $2.5 million GAM is more than they'd be able to convert for no matter what the transfer fee is if they send him abroad. So I don't know. We'll see. That's one to watch. He wants a new contract. He's happy in LA, but he wants a new contract. So we'll see.
They don't seem to want to give it to him. All right, Chicago Fire, anything to add before we move on? I think we've sort of hit it all, to be honest. Tom, are we bringing you in? Dave, will you come into the Malort shot for playoff appearance deal with Ezra, or am I still standing alone?
Now, I've had off-brand Malort at bougie places that I've not hated, so I'm okay with it. The only thing is no matter what I do, I won't talk about it as much as you. So people may not even know it's going to happen. So I don't even have to do it, even if I say yes, because you'll talk about it for the rest of the year.
Got it. I'll talk about it for the three of us. I'm in for that. Like, I'll sign onto that deal right now. Dotted line. Here we go. All right, let's keep it moving. Brenner, An offer is in from Serie A, Udinese. Tom Bogert, who we know and love, reports that FC Cincinnati have received a transfer offer from Udinese for Brenner. This is per sources. Deal would be worth around $9 million. That's including add-ons and a sell-on percentage. Other clubs are in the mix, and maybe you should assume more bids are coming. Take us through it, Tom.
Yeah, Udinese are kind of the first club to make an official offer for Brenner. There are numerous clubs that have serious interest and are talking about potential bids. So that's why, again, I do believe that this is just the first bid. It's for $7 million up front, including add-ons. I probably wouldn't accept that if I was in charge. I'd at least wait to see what else was coming, and I believe that's what they're doing. So we'll see how this one moves. But yeah, Brenner has a lot of interest abroad. This is, you know, going back for this time last year, we were talking about, you know, Brazilian clubs are trying to get him back on a free loan because, you know, the first season didn't go great. And now we're talking a year later, you know, a mid-table Serie A club or insert, you know, a Champions League level club from, you know, a non-top five league that could come in. These clubs that do have the money to make this worth FC Cincinnati's while, if they do, you know, decide that a bid's acceptable. Brenner does want to go to Europe. He said that when he signed with Cincinnati. This is, you know, we talk about John Duran. We talk about some of these other young rising talents from South America. The plan is always come here for a few years and then develop, enjoy your time. We'll move you on to Europe, as is your ultimate dream. So I assume that Brenner, sooner rather than later, is going to leave. And if you had to push me for a guess, I'd assume that it does get done this month.
Would you do this deal or something close to it, Dave, if you were Cincinnati?
No, I wouldn't. If I was... I'm specifically being in the shoes of Chris Albright and Pat Noonan.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't sign Brenner. I'm not on the hook to get out of a deal that I made a mistake on. I recouped his value last year in a year where I didn't have a back line and I made it to the second round of the playoffs. I'd be shocked if FC Cincinnati found a starting forward this year who gave them better production than Brenner. So unless my owner tells me you need to get this money back and we move on from there, I wouldn't make the move right now. And I would, and then you have to be smart about the player. That's the only other thing, right? Brenner has already sort of expressed interest. You have to make sure that you say, okay, here is a number that we won't say no to, but it's not going to be lower than the number you acquired him for.
It might be.
Yeah, I'm not sure if they have a specific number that you know, that, as you point out, like, again, I'm sure if it was 20, they'd say yes to that, but I don't know if they have a hard and fast. We will not do it for anything less than blank. But again, like, I think getting closer to, like, he was acquired for $13 million, I think anything in that ballpark, and then you throw in maybe add-ons, throw in a sell-on to wherever he goes next, I think that is within the ballpark. It's within reason. The same, like, that doesn't necessarily mean that they'll accept it. Like, the $7 million that Chivas offered for Brandon Vazquez, I think we all agree that's a fair and acceptable bid if you wanted to. It's not like, oh, that's a
wasn't disrespectful.
Yeah, so that doesn't necessarily mean they'll accept it. But I think that if this gets increased to eight figures, you know, whether it's around the $12 million plus incentives, whatever it is, like, that's within the ballpark of, all right, like, are we going to do this or not?
And I think they're not going to get allocation money out of this. I'll say that. Like, you got to recoup all your costs, and then basically it's profit that what you can convert to allocation money. I don't see a future where that exists for FC Cincinnati. But, like, remember, Brenner was in the doghouse. Like, before this year, he was an unmitigated bust. It was like, we're never going to get that money back, probably. Like, we'll be lucky to move him on at any significant number. Now you got a full season of production of 18 goals, 6 assists. You made the playoffs with him. He was still a problem early on, but you brought him back into the fold. It helps when he's scoring goals. Like, if they can get it in the ballpark, I think that's still a success, given what he brought to their first team. And then, look, you have the sell-on percentage. You really got to try to bet if you want that future on the sell-on and on the add-ons. And if a club like Udinese is coming in for Brenner, to me, that is a very good sign for FC Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. Because Udinese and the Pozzo family, they own Udinese, they own Watford. Their whole MO is buy low, sell high. They just bought Ismael Kone. Look, they had to have thought $8 million was a very good deal for Ismael Kone. Otherwise, based on their club profile and their history, they don't make the move. Like, this is a family, this is an ownership group that's made their money,
but
that's created successful clubs on recognizing talent at good numbers and saying, we'll take them for 2 years, then we'll sell them at a much higher number.
Yeah, if you sell
them, I'd be encouraged if I was Cincy.
If you sell them for $9 million and you get 25% sell on, and you assume that, like you said, Udinese does what they do, which is build up his value and sell him again, you could probably get close to 10 more million on that sell on. But Brenner scored double digit goals last year.
Yeah, I know.
And Ismael Kone wasn't even a starter the full year. Right. And you're putting those numbers next to each other. I love Ismael Kone. I know he's younger. I think he's a superstar in the making. But that's the point is, one, I don't think you're at that number yet because this wasn't your mistake. And
what if, though? What if in selling him, the ownership at Cincy comes back to you and says, the player you didn't sign is now gone. We still have money for you in that ballpark to go make a signing. What if
But that's spending on what?
I'm sure it would have to be scouting.
It would have to be a young DP. But Chris Albright, when he took this job last winter, first interview he gave me, he said, like, I'm excited about the potential here. Like, there are targets that we wouldn't even look at my previous club, and not a shot at Philly. It's just a fact that Philly's club record signing was last winter for $2.8 million. Since he had, you know, 13 for Brenner, they had a purchase option in Jurgen Locadia for $10 million that they hoped they had to spend because he would have worked out.
Drink.
But they declined. Like, they overspent on Lucho. Like, all of these, and like Lucho, it's ended up being like a great deal. But at the time, it was, oh wow, like that was a high
fee.
It
was a stretch.
Like,
yeah.
So they spent like, I think it was $5 million on a U22 initiative signing Isaac Atanga. Like, they have the money. It would have to be a young DP if Brenner does go.
That's painful.
but here,
go ahead.
No, I agree with you, Tom. But I would just say, take their roster. How do they get better this year? Replacing Brenner with a young designated player is not how they do that. They already brought in Miazga. The real improvements they need to make are at fullback, which is nowhere near the conversation of using transfer fee money, right? Like, that's at a way lower level. Celentano was a home run on a GA. And I think there's a legitimate opportunity right now for them to push to win a trophy. And I think you have to trust your culture and say what Pat Noonan built, Brenner will continue to be engaged and inspired this season. It also maximizes Brandon Vasquez, because when you look at Vasquez's year, he started the year scoring. He ended the year as a creator. A lot of that team was built around Lucho and Brandon setting up Brenner. So I think you also maximize the talent there. There's no reason that you can't tell me FC Cincinnati doesn't have a shot at MLS Cup or Shield, or, well, maybe Shield's a step too far, but I don't know yet based on the way some of these rosters are built at this moment. And if you're going to do that, Brenner is in the team. And if Chris Albright is saying, I can work with numbers that are different, one of those, rather than spending, is saying, I don't need to take this deal because I can win now with the roster I have.
I don't disagree with anything that you're saying right now. One of the things I would say is that Sergio Santos was probably sort of an insurance bet on this front last year. Yeah, he was a great sub for them in critical moments, but he was sort of the insurance of like, okay, well, if we need to sell Brenner, at least we have that to sort of carry us through. I see you making that face.
Where am I right now?
I see you making that
face.
I'm
sorry, what?
It's insurance. It's not a Brenner.
Don Bonzi was starting the first month of the season instead of Brenner. Like, they were scoring goals then too. Like, this attack is so pyrotechnic. Like, I don't know. I still believe in this attack. I'm a big fan of Brenner. But, like, I still think that this attack is going to be super strong. And, again, if the player wants to leave, this is the next time that you sign a 20-year-old from Brazil. The next time you try to sign somebody from Argentina. And you go, well, what? Brenner was here for 4 years? How did that happen? Like, oh, I remember he publicly said, I want to leave. What happened? Like, these are the things that you have to be aware of.
This is also the peak, right? Like, let's be real. Brenner just turned 23. Like, it's not like the curve is just like, okay, well, there's another $15 million on the other side. Like, probably in terms of what he's going to be able to garner in this league at his age profile, this more than likely is the peak of value. So to me, you've seen Albright be a freaking wizard when it comes to maximizing weird MLS assets over his time in Cincy. Like, this is his first big test of maximizing an asset that you're trying to sell overseas. How can you create and manipulate and maximize the market for this asset, Brenner, in this moment? We're about to see if he can do it. Sounds to you, Tom, like, despite all our arguing, and I completely agree with you, Dave, like, I love this team. If they're going for a trophy, and that's the only priority, that's it, you don't sell Brenner. But if you're trying to thread the needle of, like, transfer window, age profile, etc., you probably have to do it.
And I would add, I don't think the season's gone if they sell Brenner. Like, I don't think this is a black and white thing. We're having a conversation and sort of looking at the edges. I trust this roster. I trust, as you said, the front office, the coaching staff. There's a space in which they are equally successful, if not more successful, in selling Brenner. So I don't think it's cut and dry, but I do think this is a unique situation where with Durant, there's no question, right? And there's no one associated to the Chicago Fire who are like, I don't know if we're going to do that now. I think Cincinnati is in a point of strength to be able to say, just sit and wait and think that moment and say, is this the right move for us right now?
I agree. We'll see. We'll see. Time to make the move since he's trying to figure it out. By the way, speaking of interesting situations, Columbia International, right back, fullbacks, Santiago Arias training with FC Cincinnati. Didn't work out for him really at Atletico Madrid, but huge talent. Saw it at PSV, saw it in the national team. See it in pictures on Instagram and Twitter, Tom.
This is going to be such a great signing. Yeah, so the report came out that Cincy were interested in him, and then new signing Marco Angulo accidentally put up a training photo on Instagram with Santiago Arias in the background, like texting somebody at the club. I was like, he's here right now? He's training? And they were like, yeah, he's here. We're still, nothing's done yet, but yeah, he's here. This would be an awesome sign if they get it done. Like, right wing back was, if they'd stay with the 5-2-1-2, like, right wing back was the one spot, and like, I guess third center back, but right wing back was so crucial and just such an easy spot for them to upgrade. So Santiago Arias would be a great signing.
That is Alvis Powell slander there from Tom. But Facundo Torres to Arsenal.
Yeah, I'm with you, Tom. It's not slander if it's facts. Yeah.
Fabrizio Romano saying that Facundo Torres said, quote, Orlando confirmed to me that there was contact with Arsenal, but then I left for the World Cup. We will see now how it goes. I would love to play in Europe. It's a dream I've had since I was a kid. Now, I fully believe the sentiment behind that second part of the quote, which is that he'd love to play in Europe. It's a dream, he said, since he was a kid. I have tried to track down the breadcrumbs of where that original quote came from, that Orlando confirmed me there was contact with Arsenal, but I left for the World Cup. He left for the World Cup, yes. The rest of it, I'm not saying that Fabrizio is wrong. I'm not saying the other people that reported have wrong. I would not say that I would, like, go into a court of law and be like, this is unassailable fact, or, like, you know, the laws of the universe are built around an assumption that Orlando was contacted by Arsenal. That's all I'm saying. We'll keep our eye on it. DP spot's still open as we run through some more news around MLS. Toronto has a DP spot open. Tom, but is it might be complicated? What might complicate issues with their DP spot?
Yeah, I mean, they do have a DP spot open, but like Bob Bradley, like, kind of straight up said, we don't have the money for somebody like Bernadeschi or Insigne, which I don't know if he means the cap charge for a senior DP, which is 612, or we don't have the discretionary spend to sign a young DP that would hit the cap at 200,000, but we'd have to pay a significant transfer fee. So I don't, from all intel from, you know, Michael Singh from the Parlay, from people I've talked to, from just kind of, you know, conversations around the league, it seems like it's the latter, in that Jonathan Osorio might just be, you know, a placeholder in that third DP to save allocation money because they don't plan on getting a young DP. Again, these things are all fluid. I'm not saying that with absolute certainty, but last year we were talking about, maybe they can go sign another Italian international out of contract. I'm not sure I'd expect that right now.
Okay. We talked about Chicago's DP9. That's a big one. Atlanta's DP9 spot is another very big hole. There's a lot of rumors sort of floating around them right now. You got anything on that, Tom?
No, they're the Greek international striker at Celtic, whose name I'm not going to try to pronounce out of respect to the Greek language and Greek people in general, and to not look like an idiot. Fabrizio Romano has said that Celtic have agreed a $4 million deal with a Japanese club for this player, and Atlanta are still working on that potential deal. So we'll see where that goes. But they are going to sign a DP number 9 when Joseph Martinez leaves.
Okay. His name is Georgios Giakoumakis.
I was going to say,
I had no shot at that.
The key with Greek names, in my experience, is they are actually exactly how they're spelt. There's just a zillion letters.
So I also didn't have it up in front of me, so I couldn't even phonetically sound it out. So that was a train wreck waiting to happen. That's a good teammate right there bailing me out of pressure.
All right. Any and all Greek listeners, please send us mail on whether or not Dave got that right with his sounded out method. Minnesota's DP9 spot continues to be an issue. Maybe they're going South Korea as well. Any updates there? Is it still sort of, nah.
Nothing new from what I've told.
But they LAFC signed a center back.
They did, yes. From the second division.
The Swedish second tier.
From Anders' home nation.
Mikhail Marquez, he's 21 years old. He's made 46 appearances in the Swedish second tier. Andy Greeter said that this is likely to be U22 initiative. It's a, I've reported that it's a $250,000 transfer fee, so they could make a U22 initiative. It's fluid if they wanted to, but if they do make him a U22 initiative, it shows that they think that he's ready to be a rotation center back right now.
I didn't know that Minnesota was allowed to sign center backs under the age of 31. So that's a unique development.
Yeah, big time news around MLS there. And then LAFC, we talked about the Arango situation, but like they have two senior DPs and a bunch of U22s, unless that changes via the transfer market. So they have an open DP spot, but it would probably need to be a young DP. And we've seen them go out and make big signings along that front. So we'll see on that one.
Are you talking LAFC or Minnesota right now, by the way?
LAFC.
Oh,
God.
Oh, LAFC. Never mind. Sorry. Okay, continue.
But you had Minnesota Nuggets.
Yeah, well, something we pressing. Had a Minnesota conversation, and we never mentioned that Hasani Dodson's back. And we don't know what Roman Mentaner is.
Now we mentioned it.
But we had this whole conversation about where do these guys fit, and it's like, well, the glue guy's back, right? So now you have all these pieces that fit next to him, and that was a huge loss for them. And I think alone, if they don't make any move at number nine, I think they're already a better team than they were last year.
I want to give you plaudits and credit for a Wyatt Almsberg nugget that was super valuable, and then a Hasani Dodson nugget.
Listen, as a rehab guy, I'm just trying to make sure everyone in physical therapy feels like they're getting their dues.
Nobody is. If you think anybody has a microscope around MLS more magnified than ours, you are absolutely wrong.
Shout out to Corey Hayes. Big year this year. Let's go, Corey. Not from Minnesota, but for
speaking of Carlos Guerrero, speaking of midfielders that have played in Dallas, at least, Carlos Guerrero potentially back to MLS. A lot of reporting around this one, including yours, Tom. The reports are that he would be going to the Quakes, who we've been waiting for to make a signing. It's like, you know, the meme where the guy's poking something, like, do something, do something. And Lucci said they were gonna, and they haven't. Any word on this?
I don't know exactly where things stand, and Transfer Markets Manuel Veth also said that San Jose are the team that are interested in Carlos Guerrero. This would be, I think, a good signing. Lucci Gonzalez had him in Dallas. It's when he was playing off it, playing super regularly, and then it was like a $4 million transfer to Augsburg. You were saying he has 12 starts with Augsburg in the Bundesliga. Like, this is, you know, should be viewed as what they believe to be a very high-quality defensive midfielder, which is so key to any good team in this league. And again, he's somebody who knows the Lucci system, who knows Lucci. He's probably a good relationship there. That's a lot of filibustering to say. It's somewhere between interest and finalizing. I don't know how far along. I don't know how close. I believe that Augsburg put out something like last week that they let him leave training camp because he was in talks with a team in MLS, or just another team, and it's come out that it's Carlos Guerrero. Yeah, this is a very inefficient 2 minutes for me, and I apologize in advance. But this, I don't know how close it is or how likely it is, but again, I'd imagine it's very serious.
We've heard rumors for Guerrero coming back to MLS over the last year or two, even though he's continued to be a starter for Augsburg. So he's shown interest that he wants to come back to MLS, and then obviously Lucci worked with him in Dallas, where for Lucci, he's coming in. This roster is pretty set for a team that struggled last year. So he's got to find ways to bring pieces in that can sort of bring his philosophy a little bit quicker, as well as affect this team. We know they made a run at Aaron Long as well, so they know the back line is the big issue. And as Tom said, the starting point for most MLS teams is a D-mid. If you have a D-mid who starts to get in, I don't think Guerrero's at the top of the list, but I think he's at the bottom of that upper echelon. That elevates teams pretty quickly. It's what we saw for Cincinnati last year. Mm-hmm. It's what Portland has been built on for the last 12 years. And so it would make a lot of sense if this was one of the early signings for Lucci.
All right, let's go fast here and see what we got. A lot of people saying, hey, St. Louis has first pick in the allocation order. What might they do with that one? They didn't need it for Indiana Vasilev. They got that deal done from the expansion draft, 2-year deal with some options, tied that loose end up. Of course, they used an expansion draft pick there. So some depth on the wing, a young player, see if they can get more out of him than he showed in Miami. David Weiss hit us up and said, how is Montreal just sitting around doing nothing with all the money they've gotten so far? I think that's sort of their strategy, is that they're probably looking for players to trade for in league.
I mean, they spent some on George Campbell and Aaron Herrera, right? Those are replacements for the guys that they lost. It doesn't feel... I mean, unless they're going to go out.
And they re-signed Wanyama. We didn't think they were going to do that. Yep. And if they didn't do that, it wasn't like, oh, if they don't sign Wanyama, big DP incoming. It was probably just like, no DP spot used. Yep. So
I think they're expecting more from Toy next year. And obviously, Romel had a huge year. I wouldn't say I guess you would say the number 10 replacing Georgie would be the spot where you'd spend money.
I wish they would just go sign a really high quality DP. They you know, Wanyama was, I believe, a free transfer, and Georgie was a trade. And those are kind of their key air quote high price players. Like, just come on, go sign one high money, high impact DP and add to this group that has so much depth and has been so interesting. I was saying this last summer because it was very clear that this was even before the Georgie news came out that Wanyama's out of contract. They've resigned him, but it looked like Georgie, it looked like Kone, it looked like, you know, insert all these players, Alistair Johnson. It looks like all these key players were about to be leaving. Like, last summer would have been the time for them to really go for a DP. But again, I'm restating it again. Please go sign a high level DP to kind of lead this group and bring it up one more tier.
I don't think that's going to happen. So.
Yeah. So, yeah. No. This is all.
Yeah. No. I get it. I get it. You're trying to. You're trying to manifest it. I understand. Meanwhile, the Philadelphia Union seemed to really like Joaquin Torres, who is a guy that you would think would have an opportunity to step in for Georgie in that sort of like dual attackers behind a center forward role. 7 goals, 12 assists, and 55 appearances for Montreal. He's about to turn 26. Has been a good young player, and the Union, like Montreal, have a good eye for players around the league that maybe need a new place to be. Is there any likelihood this happens, or is this just sort of, hey, like we reached out, we called him, TBD?
Yeah, I mean, there was some preliminary talks last week. I haven't heard any updates since, so I guess we'll see. You know, Montreal prefer to keep him from what I've heard, which, you know, makes sense, but they've been pretty realistic. They've been one of the clubs that said, yeah, everybody has a price kind of thing. So if Philly are willing to pay over the odds, which they rarely slash never do, then maybe something can happen. But, you know, it was described to me kind of pessimistically in terms of the like strong likelihood of something happening.
This is one of those moves that I think would make sense in that I think he'd have more value on the Philly roster than he would on Montreal. We saw him early in the year sort of be like a microwave, explosive for a couple games, disappear, decent off the bench.
He compared to a microwave?
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Love that. I'm sorry. I needed that clip. Bad teammate by me. But
he can't replace Georgie, and he's not consistent. But in Philly, he wouldn't have to be. And Philly, the one thing we've talked about a couple times already this offseason is they were so thin last year. Like, they weren't playing players. They weren't using 5 subs in the playoffs. And they've already lost Paxton, and you don't know where Bedoya is at. They brought in Andres Pereira, I think, to fix some of that. Joaquin Torres, I think, would be a perfect piece as well. Second forward, can play as a 10, shifty, electric. And if I was Philly, I would pay more than what he's probably valued because he can bring more to my team. And so I think it's fair for Montreal to say, yeah, this guy only started 15 games for us, only had 3 goals, but we know his value for you. And so I think there could be a really cool in-between place where this makes the league better by having a move like this.
Here's a quote from Kamal Miller on the Money Buys Happiness pod, that's probably very fitting for this quote, to be fair. Quote, I got a taste of that next level at the World Cup, and at times I was outplaying these big money forwards, so I want to go take a look. There's a lot of solid clubs that have said they've got me on their radar. It's easier to get a summer move, though, so now it's a waiting game. Again, I'll just reiterate, the Money Buys Happiness pod is a good place for him to put this, basically trying to get a move to Europe in the summer. We'll see how that develops. For Montreal, some other news, Kyle Duncan is back to Red Bulls officially. You know, as we've said many times, anytime you can lose a player for free and loan him back with a purchase option, you've just got to do it. Also, shout out to Carlo, who educated me on New Jersey in the mailbag. Don't have time to read through all the plaudits that he gave to the Garden State, but I know that Tom is on board. We don't have time. Tom also reporting, again, this rundown is basically just screenshots of Tom's tweets, that the Houston Dynamo are finalizing a TAM deal on Moroccan attacking midfielder Amine Bassi from FC Metz. He's been very good in Ligue 2. He can play as a 10 or as a winger. 26 goals, 16 assists, and 109 Ligue 2 appearances. So good signing for them. We'll see how that impacts their team.
So so we think this is a 10, where then Ace playing.
No, I think this is a winger who can move inside. Personally.
Yeah. No, he could do either. And like, he can still play as like one of those, if they play 4-3-3 and have him as like a free 8, like kind of, you know, like LAFC's formation, like he can do that too. But yeah, like you said, we'd be by like,
because they've already brought in a winger this offseason.
Yeah.
From Paraguay.
They needed a few creative additions, I think, to be fair.
Yeah. Ivan Franco. So 25-year-old, seems to be, it's a win now sort of move. It's not a develop and play on. It's like early prime. He needs to produce for us in MLS. Seems like Christian Ramirez deal is done on a 3-year contract to the Crew, says Stephen Goff at the Washington Post. Alexander Collins, don't know what the hell's happening there. everybody's saying he's going to Boca, but then Boca signed the center back from America. Maybe they need more center backs. The teams are at MLS that aren't NYCFC can't really give him the money he wants, it seems. But it doesn't seem like NYCFC want to give him that money either. They did give a DP deal to a center back in Tego Martins last year, and Martins was not as good as Collins. They've now lost Maxi, probably Santi, probably Collins, definitely Hebert, definitely Nicolas Acevedo, definitely Anton Tinnerholm, maybe Sean John to Toronto. Are they in trouble, Dave?
What's the first game of the season? February 23rd?
25th.
25th, yeah. Ask me on February 24th, because that's normally where the six players get signed from Torque and whatever else. We did this, what, 2 years ago? They, like, didn't sign a single player, and then all of a sudden, Santi drops, and Thiago Andrade drops, and Talas drops all at the same time. I would say from a vacuum of, I don't know, the other players that are in the CFG portal. What
it's
else?
Like it's like the transfer portal. Yeah.
What else are you spending it on? And I know Thiago Martins is already a DP, but you could have one of the best back lines in MLS, and that gives the young attackers time to find their feet. And I just, this team obviously is going to take a large step back this season. And I think that's okay in the flow of how you build rosters, but how large a step back, I think this is the biggest decider.
All right. Toronto in 2023. We're seeing if they can take a step forward. They did sign Adama Diamande. Bob, just going back to the well, baby. He just loves Dio. So Dio's back on a multi-year deal. They have Jesus Jimenez as well. And they have Ayo Akinola, who all reports are that basically the moment that they signed him, they were trying to trade him. Okay, should they trade him? And I don't know, probably.
They've been trying.
Who would make sense as a trade partner? I threw out some. Doyle says Nashville. He'd be on a U22 deal, I believe, right? So he'd be a 200 cap hit, but you'd have to have a U22 slot. Colorado squarely in the prospect rehab business. They don't have a center forward. Like, it's basically, it's Diego Rubio, and Rubio would be a guy to play behind him. I think that would work pretty well. Montreal, always in that zone. Doesn't seem like Kai's coming back. At least that's what Kai says. You have Toy. I know, Dave. I know. Dallas, maybe as a nine to replace Hara. NYCFC, Tyus Magno stays on the wing. San Jose, although they have a Bobasi.
No, I don't think San Jose would want him. I think Vancouver is probably more likely than San Jose. Replace Cavallini.
I don't think so.
Cordovagon, any one of those stick out to you as like, this makes sense, would be good. I mean, Colorado does because you have Robin and they don't have a nine.
And then the Nashville one does because they have enough of a core that they can take a risk. It's a risk. He hasn't really been healthy and he hasn't really performed at a high level. So it's a lot of assets to give up for a guy, not who's unproven, who's proven he has not been successful. Yeah. In this league. So you kind of really need to bring him into a form team that doesn't rely on him.
The one that makes the most sense to me is Colorado, just because this is sort of where they land.
Except that they didn't play Parise. They brought in Parise. I agree. No, I agree with you. Robin knows him. Robin was there. He was a part of the coaching staff that brought him through and signed him.
But and you don't give team- up. You don't. If I'm, I don't give up very much. It's more of a, I'll take the contract so you don't have to have the contract sort of situation.
And it's the same with Cabral. It's the risk that his value coming out of your club will be higher than what you give up to bring him in because he is a young prospect.
Okay, let's talk USMNT January camp and get on out of here. Watke with the tweet that sums it all up for us. Getting really amped for this January camp. Think it could be our most January camp yet. No coach, no roster. Fans don't care. Hell yeah, let's ride. Here we go. If that doesn't get you hyped, I don't know what would. So we have some news around it. Per Goff, Julian Gressel has earned a call-up. That's exciting. Julian, recently a citizen of the United States, and Per Goff gets his first call-up. What's your reaction to that, Dave? 29 years young. Is he 29?
Yeah, I think he got drafted when he was 24 because he came over from Germany and played the full 4 years at Providence. Go Friars.
Whew. 29.
Yeah.
As a story, I love it. And he's arguably the best crosser of the ball in MLS over the last 5-6 years.
And for the January camp, I mean, it's pretty confusing what this is supposed to be because you don't have a coach and you don't really have a clear vision. This is an opportunity to just get him in and sort of see how he fits with the rest of the group. I would also say I'm most likely calling up mainly young players. So this is a way to bring a veteran in without sort of having to go to an actual veteran like a Kellen or Paul Ariola and be like, hey, can you come to this camp you don't really want to come to? So I think that's a good way to sort of sneak him in. And yeah, as you said, the thing Gressel's good at, he's great at. So if you can find ways to isolate the game and fit him in, you could do that there. And he's an interesting one.
Brandon Vasquez, you reported.
Sorry. Go ahead. I just wanted to add that I'm a huge Julian Gressel fan. Like I'm super excited for him to be at this camp. I think that it's smart for US to bring him in. There's no argument not to, given his track record in MLS and given now that he's a US citizen. I think this is an awesome story. Whether he gets two caps, one cap, and you know, never comes back to a camp, I think this is phenomenal, and I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Brandon Vasquez reportedly going to be there as well. He told us, as he told Michele Giannone as well, he hasn't heard from Mexico. So all the talk about sort of dual national chatter, I mean, Mexico's not doing what they would need to do to get involved in that. So he's sort of been waiting for his opportunity with the U.S. Seems like he will get it in this camp, and it is hugely deserved for Brandon Vasquez, Tom.
Yeah, so sources told me that he was called in and it was up to him to accept or decline. I'm like 99.99% sure that he has accepted the call and he will be there in January. Like you said, I think this is two windows overdue. I thought that he should have gotten a shout last summer, maybe in the fall. I understood why, after they didn't bring him in the summer, that maybe he wouldn't have a chance to break onto the World Cup roster in the fall camp. Look, regardless, this is just a long-winded way of saying, like, I think that he's within the shout of not just being in this camp, but being a regular member of this pool, being a regular member on these rosters, and potentially whether there's a new coach or whether it's Berhalter again, like, I think that he could fit a lot of systems. I think that he's, you know, well worth a look, and I'm looking forward to seeing what he does this month. Again, you know, they are watered down opponents. This is not a FIFA window, so this won't be Serbia's first team. This won't be Colombia's first team. This won't even be Colombia's North America MLS. Like, John Duran would have been there if he wasn't at the U20 championships in South America. So, you know, take that with a grain of salt, as always with January camps. But, you know, this is good news.
All right. We had a tweet here from Lucas. Which MLSers should get called up for this January camp? So he suggested Brandon Vasquez. Seems like that'll happen. Aiden Morris. He was on my list. Right, calendar. Had a great year for Miami last year. Classic Weeby segment. Let's do a list. Dave, who do you want to see?
I put together like a full roster, which I don't have to go through, and I think we'll all have a lot of similar names, but one of the big ones that stood out to me that deserves a chance, I think, is Leon Flock. Like, his flexibility, the way he plays, right? You don't know who the coach is, you don't know what the system is, but if he can do the things he does for Philly at the next level, I think he's a really good roster piece and maybe the future of like what Christian Roldan sort of was, obviously, in some different roles. So that was one of the big ones that stood out to me.
So he's funny because you had the Julian Gressel. I was like, oh my God, he's 29. Whereas Leon Flock's like, oh yeah, my God, he's 21.
Yeah.
So people thinking like, hey, wait a minute, this is like a mid-20s MLS midfielder. No, he's very, very young with a ton of professional games under his belt.
Absolutely. Justin Glad popped out to me as well, and I talked to him about it last week, but he had another good year, and center back's a question mark position. And I don't think a lot of the names that are going to be around are going to be available for this one. And then goalkeeper. Brad Stuver was borderline goalkeeper of the year. Drake Callender was a finalist. I think those guys deserve a chance. Roman Salentano on that list as well. And I'm a huge fan of Emi Ochoa at San Jose. He hasn't played yet, but he's also a dual national. And you look at what they did with Gaga Slonina, of like keeping him involved and keeping him engaged. And goalkeeper is a tough position because you don't really have that many minutes. Well, as Tom laid out, Serbia team, and I don't know, and you know, a men's league Colombia squad might be a good chance to call him in and play him. And so those were some of the names along the backside that I thought be interesting for a camp like this.
Tom, many names you've got? And I'm also very much in for men's league international call-ups of any kind.
Yeah, I mean, for me, like, you guys hit all the, and we'll go the obvious ones too, like people who are MLS based that are in the senior national team, you know, your Ariola, Costa, Roldan, Morris, and, you know, Zimmerman, insert all those names, of course. But for me, like, literally anybody going to the U20 World Cup for the United States that would be released from their squad, be that MLS clubs or be that somebody like Paxton Aronson at Eintracht Frankfurt, it's extremely unlikely that he plays in their first two Bundesliga games back after the World Cup break and the winter break. Is it more valuable for him, his experience, and his value to Eintracht Frankfurt and in the global market for him to come here, be with the senior national team, get a cap or two, and then for the rest of the time, Frankfurt can say, we have a senior U.S. international at 19 years old or 20 years old, whatever he is. You know, he's settling in with the group in preseason training. If they release him, I'd at least make the call if I was the United States, because he's somebody with a big future. Jack McGlynn, of course, the Philadelphia Union. We talked about Brian Gutierrez. Again, just go down the list of anybody who's on that, who's going to be on the U-20 World Cup team.
Daniel Edelman would be another one.
Yeah, I would say Edelman would be one of those names. Cade Cowell, I think, would go in there. Agreed. Brian Gutierrez as well.
One more that's probably not for the U-20 World Cup team, but a little bit before, Josh Widener. He's, you know, hugely rated 17-year-old center back, like one of the highest rated 17-year-old center backs in the world. He's, you know, visited Benfica. There's all these teams in Europe, you know, Hoffenheim, whatever it is, like, that want to sign him when he turns 18 in the summer. I'd bring him in. Yeah, he's somebody who they hope continues to develop and will be with into the senior national team at some point one day. Certainly is an integral part to the U19 team right now. I think he's a captain. Will be with the U20s at some point. So Josh Widener is somebody else I'd try to call in.
Bring in all the left backs, I would say. Want to see John Tolkien. He might be the future of that position for the U.S. DeJuan Jones, a little bit older, might not be the future, but maybe he is the present for a little while. I want to see him get a longer shot there and see how he's developed. A name that Joe Lowry had at MLSsoccer.com in his write-up was Andrew Gutman.
Yeah, I was going to ask about Gutman.
Yeah, I'd like to see that one too. Miles Robinson's a really obvious one, I think. We said Roman Celentano. Give me some Bryce Duke.
I get the take. Love Bryce Duke. I would say the list for me of center mids that are interesting, I think that actually center mid is one of the deeper positions where you could say Mark Delgado, Paxton Pomykal, Keaton Parks, Aiden Morris. Like, there are guys who play more minutes already in MLS who I think have a chance you'd bring them in this rather than probably like a lot of prospects at that specific position outside of a Jack McGlynn who looks otherworldly as a talent.
All right, let's get some mail and get on out of here. I think we'll get this roster tomorrow, Wednesday, at like noon Eastern, maybe something like that. We won't have a podcast like on that, but you know, as a semi newly minted Scuff subscriber, I would tell you that they will have everything you could possibly ever want.
I would add Jonathan Gomez.
Another one who's in Europe who might not be with the first team, or would be a team might say, "Hey, this is more valuable than to playing a B team game."
In the mailbag, Andrew Cruz hit us up, says he's a UK born and based listener who has been a fan of MLS since purchasing a Metro Stars jersey during a family holiday to Florida in 1997. During lockdown, I began reading far more regularly again, and I was hoping that the team could recommend some books by those who have either played the majority of their career in North America, or perhaps books by or about those involved in the setup and evolutions of the league. Basically, anything on North American soccer, pre-MLS, or even USL is also great. Recently, he has finished The Voyagers, Canadian men's soccer team's quest to reach the World Cup by our friend up in Canada, Joshua Cloak. And then USA 94, World Cup that changed the game by Matthew Evans, and the Beckham experiment, obviously the classic by Grant Wall. And then, of course, When the Dream Became Reality, Bobby Warshaw. He says he wonders if he is the only owner of this book in the UK. So if you have any suggestions, hit him up. I'm trying to think of books in the past. I used to have a huge soccer collection of books, and it got lost at MLS HQ. In the pandemic chaos.
One that I would throw in is The United States of Soccer by Phil West. It is like comprehensive, but it's really good in terms of the early days build up to MLS, how the World Cup affected it, and a lot about the supporters around the league that helped the league sort of find itself.
There's a really good book on the Cosmos that got made into the documentary. I'm trying to remember what it's called.
Once in a Lifetime, I think.
Once in a Lifetime, yeah. I really enjoyed that one, and it's like stories from that era, and it's really really great as well. I think if you just want to read something that's not a book, Pablo Maurer has done a bunch of great work on the history of the sport in the U.S., and some of the best stuff has been on Team America in D.C., and that has a bunch of great nuggets. We did one on MLS Soccer. I think he recently did one on The Athletic as well, so go check that out. And if you have suggestions, hit us up on Twitter or the text line or via email. That would be wonderful, and we will end with this fever dream of an email from Tom Cooper. Hey, guys, I would love to hear your thoughts on Salt Bae being banned from the U.S. Open Cup final. He was definitely cringy and weirdly aggressive, and being banned from tournaments is not at all a wild response to his actions, but the U.S. Open Cup is the first one to do it, Like, is that supposed to be as comical as it is, Or was he a frequent USOC attendee? I am so confused by this announcement, and I just can't think about it without laughing. Same, Tom. Same. I don't know. I don't know what to say.
He was a frequent attendee. If I believe correctly, he's a season ticket holder for the Des Moines Menace, and he's a huge Dayton Dutch Lions fan, so he kind of pops between those.
Really? See, I thought he had a spot in the Villages.
Maybe.
I figured he had a spot.
Him and Adriano?
There. Yeah, for sure. Or what was the team? The something-something Warriors in Florida?
Florida Soccer Soldiers?
Florida Soccer Soldiers, yeah.
He seems legendary.
Like a big Florida Soccer Soldiers
legendary
guy.
Club.
Anyway, that is it for us. As always, if you want us to talk about something, hit us up. We'll be back on Thursday. LA Galaxy fans, I know we owe you a deep conversation. We'll do that on Thursday. Enjoy your week. Adios. We'll be right back.